matter on our calendar today before us. I just want to quickly comment that this court has 5 matters on the calendar. We've reached the 3rd matter on our oral argument calendar, and then we will have 2 for non-oral conference. So just checking with both attorneys, Ms. Olson and Mr. Hohlmeier, you're able to hear the court. Is that correct?
Right. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor, we sure can.
All right, and so I'll ask the marshal to call the 3rd case, and then I'll make a few comments.
Now calling case A220602, Angela Marie Backman versus Charles Robert Backman.
All right, and again, welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I think counsel are familiar with our procedures, although we are conducting this argument on a web-based application allowing video conference. Our rules remain the same. And so with that, you know the timing for your argument. You probably know that the court maintains an audio recording of today's proceedings, and that's later posted on the court's website. And so one thing we ask you to do is that before you begin your remarks, identify yourself for the record as well as the client you represent. And then it should be visible on your screen that there is a clock that's ticking down and we'll let you know how much time remains. We very much look forward to the conversation with you today and ask you to just keep an eye on a clock because things tend to go fairly quickly. So with that, counsel for appellant, we're ready for you to begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Michelle Olson and I represent appellant Charles Backman in this matter. There are a few issues that we have asked the court to review based on the district court's prior order regarding a denial of a modification of spousal maintenance in this matter. The first issue and the one that seems to be the biggest is the improper reliance on Madden v. Madden, 923 Northwest 2nd, 688. It's a Minnesota Court of Appeals 2019 case. In that the district court relied on this case to basically outright deny my client any ability to modify the spousal maintenance, claiming that because there is no requirement for her to rehabilitate, therefore a modification can't be used or certain evidence cannot be presented to show that she has rehabilitated. This reading and interpretation of Madden is flawed, and we are asking the court as a matter of law to reverse this decision and remand the case back down to have a hearing with the evidence that had been excluded and to further discuss facts regarding the issue. I think the key problem that we have is the interpretation itself. While the district court finds that rehabilitation is required in Madden, that is not the case by statute. In fact, Minnesota statute section 518.552 subdivision 2 specifically states that a maintenance award may be modified upon a showing of 1 or more 8 statutory factors, any of which makes the award unreasonable, unfair. And excuse me, I miscited that. I meant Minnesota statute section 518A.39 subdivision 2A. 552 discusses what factors are relevant, and that would be including financial resources of the party and the obligee's ability to meet needs independently. In this case, this isn't an argument. We are not arguing that she has rehabilitated herself or that she had a requirement to rehabilitate herself in the original 2012 stipulation, but that she had. And the fact that she has these changes in her financial resources and her ability to earn more is based on her own ability. That is something that is relevant and is allowed by statute. However, this interpretation is that because there isn't a requirement, the judge therefore does not need to look at these factors. And that is a misrepresentation of what our spousal maintenance statute does require. We do look at it. We always look at it when there is a modification. Now, there can be a denial upon that review and upon that evidence being submitted, but to say that because Madden requires such, requires the words rehabilitation or some type of requirement in there, therefore you can't seek a modification if something changes, would contradict long-standing statute. And we are asking the court to find that this, the district court's ruling and the district court's interpretation of Madden to be improper. And
Ms. Olson, so if Madden does not apply, or if it's not exactly on point. What case or body of case law is applicable?
We believe that the 2020 case Honky v. Honky would be more applicable at this point. It is an unpublished case. The citation is A19-0448. It was a Minnesota Court of Appeals 2020 case, and it was heard on April 27th, 2020. I believe there was review granted in July, and it was reversed and remanded, but not on the grounds we are talking about. Your Honor, specifically, we are saying that the issue here is just you can find that someone has corrected themselves or corrected their requirements for need in a prior dissolution stipulated matter. And because of that, modification is allowed. Again, this isn't a situation where we're trying to completely say that she was required to do any of these things, but the fact that she did do that does show she no longer has the need for the spousal maintenance as it was
awarded. Ms. Olson, what specifically do you make of the portion of Madden that says, quote, a district court may attribute income to a recipient, I'm leaving out a word or two, based on failure to make reasonable efforts, only if the district court had previously expressly imposed such an obligation? What do we make of that language, that only if a district court previously imposed that obligation?
I believe that that is saying if there was that obligation, that you may impose or impute income to the person if it's specifically there. But in this case, this isn't an issue where there was that requirement of rehabilitation, but the statute doesn't say that you can't, if someone rehabilitates themselves on their own, that that can't happen or that income shouldn't be considered. What Madden is saying is that if there isn't that requirement and this person hasn't rehabilitated themselves, we can't then now impose such a requirement on them. The difference here is there is a change. She does meet her needs. She is working. And while she's choosing to work less paying jobs, that is based on her own feelings, not on any actual limitation that was found in the original 2012 stipulated decree. And it's also not found in anything within Madden, because again, this isn't an issue where we are saying she is failing to rehabilitate. We're saying she has rehabilitated, and based on her financial needs now, her ability and her financial resources now, she could have a higher paying job. And other case law does allow for such imputation or imputation of income, including, I believe, Kemp v. Kemp, which is 608 Northwest 2nd 916 at 921, a Minnesota Court of Appeals 2000 case. I think it's Schallinger v. Schallinger. I know I'm butchering the names. 699 Northwest 2nd 15 at 22. That's a Minnesota Court of Appeals 2005 case. And that affirmed a finding that a spouse seeking maintenance could be self-supporting if she worked full-time. Again, this is an issue where she has decided to work part-time. She is working part-time, but she's choosing to purposefully limit herself out, her limiting her hours. And there isn't a showing that she can't work more. But that's not saying, we're not saying she had a requirement to rehabilitate. It's that because she's rehabilitated herself, we need to look at what she can presently do, and that would show her resources. That's why Madden wouldn't apply in this situation.
So Ms. Olson, let's just for a moment, let's assume your view of the law and look at your evidence. So what is what is your view about what her earning potential is? How many dollars more than what she was earning, and what evidence do you base that on? I know probably one item you're going to mention is Exhibit 8, the functional capacity evaluation, and I have some maybe specific questions about that. But other than that evaluation, what other evidence do you have that her earning potential now actually is more than what she is earning?
Your Honor, it's partly based on the deposition she took. She mentioned that she was limiting herself on jobs and that she actually took a lower paying job and did not agree to have a higher paying employment, even though it had been offered to her. It is in document 38, I believe, of or document index number 38 of the court record. It was a deposition transcript that had been filed with the court. I believe it is on page 43. She specifically said she was limiting her income because she was concerned about potentially losing some Social Security disability benefits and health insurance benefits. The capacity report that we're talking about, one of the biggest issues we had is we couldn't do a vocational report because the judge wouldn't order it. And that is something that we're asking the court to remand and allow to be conducted. This would help also show her earning potential and what vocationally she can and can't do. She admitted also in a deposition, she would have refused any job that allowed her additional hours. She also said that by herself for the last year during this time period, she hadn't missed any work due to a physical inability. She mentioned also in a deposition, she's turned down jobs, including one at a bank, one at a gas station where the earning potential was $15 an hour, which was more than what she was making before. And she said it was based on her perceived limitations, but she had agreed in that deposition that there was no doctor, psychologist, psychiatrist, or Social Security administrator that stated she could not work more hours or that she had any type of limitation. And again, that's where we get into the report where there was no specific limitations to her that, quote, patient is able to stand and sit frequently with no discomfort. Patient demonstrates maximum effort and willing to work to max capabilities. That is at document index 18. It's exhibit 8 in our filings when we were requesting it. And that is the report that you were talking about, Your Honor, the functional capacity evaluation. I think there is quite a bit of.
I'm sorry. Forgot to mute myself. I spoke up, but while you were pausing, but then I forgot to mute myself. Your brief says that that report says that she can work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. Can you point me? I don't find that in the document, in the functional evaluation. Is it possible to point me to that either now or during your rebuttal argument?
I can certainly point to it in the rebuttal, Your Honor. I think it's a recommendation that she could do it. And then Mrs. Backman did not dispute that. She agreed in her own deposition that she could work 8 hours a day for 5 days per week. So even if I can't find in the report, and I will look and try to cite to the specific page, Mrs. Backman herself in her deposition, which is on transcript page 55 of document index 38, which is the deposition transcript that got filed, she actually says that she could work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. So again, this is based on her own testimony that she has more than enough ability to work more. She's choosing not to. And that doesn't go anything towards rehabilitation. That just goes to the fact that she's purposefully limiting herself. And this
I think is so, Ms. Olson, I mean, the question appears to be that the question asks her whether Jacob Nino appeared to suggest that she could work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And she said that was true. But I don't know. I don't see where she agreed with him on that statement.
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm interpreting that as she is in agreement that she could do that, that she doesn't dispute the report itself. If she does, there is no question from her that she says she can't do what the report was suggesting. But so that is my interpretation of her statement. She also had said, I have not had anybody tell me what I physically am able to do or mentally able to do. And that is at transcript page 57, line 6 through 21 of the deposition. Again, there isn't any documentation or facts on either the prior stipulated judgment or on the recent deposition or any pleadings that she does have specific limitations and that she herself now doesn't have the ability to work more. In fact, all evidence seems to be contrary to that. The issue became, the district court found, because she doesn't have a requirement to rehabilitate, no evidence can be presented. And that is a misstatement of the Madden court. It's that if there is that requirement, the court may look at imputing income, but this is a situation where we're not saying she had a requirement to rehabilitate, but once she did, you would use the normal statutory factors under 518.552. And we are saying that the modification would be necessary under 518A.39.
I know your time is running short. So if you would agree, would you not, that her income or her income potential is just one issue among many in the analysis of whether there's a substantial change in circumstances, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. But it is one of those issues where if one of the factors meets and it shows that it's unreasonable, then you can modify. So we're saying that is one issue, but we also address different issues, which is that my client's income has changed substantially, so he can't support the same requests, as well as once the final amended findings came through, her income to her needs actually is higher. So she actually makes more. While it's slight, she does make more. And I see my time is up. May I finish?
May I ask another question, Judge Dreifeld, after that? But yeah.
Sorry, I had muted myself. Yes, both of you may go ahead. And so I think Ms. Olson, did you want to finish your answer? And then of course, Judge Johnson can proceed with follow-ups.
Yes, thank you. So what I was saying was in reviewing her income to her now income, what we've established what her income is, not even what it could be, but with her new budget, she actually exceeds her limitation or exceeds her spousal maintenance or her need for spousal maintenance. I'm trying to say it correctly.
Is that actual income or is that expected income on your part?
I believe it was income with child support together. So it would have been
actual income, what she's actually receiving, not imputing income.
I believe that is correct, Your Honor, when I was reviewing the record. And I will clarify that in my rebuttal if I'm misstating. But my understanding was it was her income plus her Social Security benefits plus her child support. So it was all three combined together, which is what we use when we're determining the spousal maintenance.
And how much is the child support?
One moment, Your Honor. I want to make sure I have the correct number.
Well, it appeared to me that her deficit without spousal maintenance is larger than the spousal maintenance award. But I was going to ask it. Your client compared to the time of the decree, has both greater income. The district court found that he had greater income and lesser expenses. So his monthly surplus before spousal maintenance has grown substantially. Is that true?
Yes, Your Honor. There had been changes to his income and it had grown. Part of this, though, is he was paying other things like tuition. We've had some emancipations of the children, but that in and of itself could also potentially modify. Again, this was to look at everybody's financial resources. And what happened was Mr. Backman's financial resources seemed to be looked at, but not fully Mrs. Backman's because of this rehabilitation issue. And that's why we believe it is inappropriate because all financial resources must be shown and reviewed.
Thank you.
Sounds like we've concluded appellant's opening argument. And so, of course, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal, Ms. Olson, if you choose. Counsel for respondent, we're ready for you when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel, may it please the court. Your Honor, what we have here are three primary issues. Two of them dovetail together. The one issue is that was brought up, not specifically addressed, but they really go together, is vocational, a request for vocational assessment. But that goes in with the denial of the modification of the reduction of spousal maintenance. One of the reasons being net income, which we haven't addressed either. But the short version of this, Your Honor, and as the court is obviously aware, the standard of review is abuse of discretion. Under the Gully case, as cited in my brief, it must be unsupported by the law and unsupported by findings, or unsupported, I should say. Here, it's absolutely supported. The court's going to be tired of one phrase, which I will be unfortunately saying a lot, that's improper burden shifting. Appellant is trying to improperly shift the burden, and if we take a look on a variety of things, but if we take a look at the Madden case, and Your Honor, I stole my cite, or my quote that I actually had on that. The Madden case, though, is the end-all and be-all, and the key takeaway, yet again, is that there is no obligation to increase his or her earning capacity, period, on that.
If I could jump in there just to make sure, I understood the argument below to be one about Ms. Backman's ability to earn income. If you look at the heading in the appellant's brief and the discussion in the appellant's brief, it's about this deposition testimony that she's able to work 40 hours, ability to work and earn substantially more than what she's actually earning. But then as I heard appellant's argument, I'm not sure that that is in fact. So I guess I'm wondering from your standpoint, was the issue below imputing income or actual income?
Imputing, Your Honor, imputing. If we take a look at the last order, my client, respondent rather, makes about $3,944 a month of actual income, and I could be a couple dollars off. There were several orders, and so I might be a smidge off on that. But her budget, the last order said it was $4,031 a month was her appropriate budget. I think one of the issues that the argument that was made in the written brief was that if you take out her, meaning my client's car, her child's car, her credit card and attorney's fees, then she's below that. And then she made an argument that that's not standard of living. So, I think, Your Honor, my understanding that the argument was never that she is making more money. It's that she's actually making arguably less, even they both went down, meaning her disability payment went down from 2012 and her income is $374 a month, I believe. But even though, so if that's the case, which it is under crystal clear under the district court order, the next argument, I think, which Your Honor was kind of alluding to, was that, hey, she has an obligation. She is self-sufficient. She's just sitting at home or whatever. And even if she was, which we absolutely disagree with that, it doesn't matter because under Madden, she has no obligation absent specific findings, which they were never done in 2012. What appellant is attempting to do, in effect, is relitigate the entire case. And that kind of goes on to my next point, which ties into this too, which is the request for the vocational assessment. I would note that there were no cases cited for authority on that, except rules of evidence.
Mr. Kohlmeier, if I can jump in for a minute too here. Before moving to whether there are some independent arguments regarding the vocational assessment request, apart from the modification of spousal maintenance request, there's no Karen waiver in this case, right?
There is not. No.
And so when you say relitigate the entire case, assuming that Ms. Backman's actual income had changed substantially, if that were true, then isn't the district court required to then go through and figure out at this point in time, at the present point in time, what do the spousal maintenance factors, how do they weigh? And that's not the same as relitigating the entire case, right? You're looking at a new point in time, assuming that there's a basis for modification in the absence of a Karen waiver.
That's spot on, Your Honor. And under 518A39, that's looking at the substantial change. Yeah, my argument, and that I probably didn't make it as well as I should have, my argument is not that it can never change, that it's a de facto Karen waiver. It is not, most certainly. But if the facts show that she is not making significantly more income, or alternatively, if he does not have a substantial change of income on the decrease side, which, as a note, he's about 25% above increased in income from 2012, then we don't even need to get to that point. Because then, because if she, if the facts show she's not self-sufficient, the imputation is not a trying to get around a Karen waiver, Your Honor.
So if I could ask one more sort of off the wall question here regarding what's in the decree and what's not in the decree. There's a mediation provision in the decree, but I didn't see in the motions below that were made any indication in the affidavit of the attorney or in the motion supporting documents that the parties attempted mediation prior to filing the motion to modify.
That's a great question, Your Honor. We're the respondent on that. This was filed in COVID by appellate in early 2020. It sat for quite some time, and then we argued it in 2021. I don't believe that we ever went to mediation on that. We did do the appellate mediation, but the original mediation, I think, and I believe, and appellant can address that, of course, but I think that was because of the COVID crisis, if you will. I don't think we quite knew what was happening.
Is that a provision that the parties can waive by their conduct then?
That's an excellent question, Your Honor. I believe yes, unless the district court enforces it. I could see district court saying requiring that a deal is a deal in effect, send us back there. The district court did not do so. But no, and I suppose the court of appeals could too. But no, I don't.
After you've done the appellate mediation, it seems a little weird to send you back to do pre-motion mediation. At the same time, though, the parties' positions in mediation, I think, are going to be markedly different if you have a district court order already than if you didn't know what the district court was going to do and if you hadn't incurred costs yet. So potentially there is a reason to sort of unwind the clock there. But anyway, thank you for letting me ask those questions on that were not directly related to the arguments presented.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah, I'd be happy to answer what I can. So wrapping up those two points, if we allow the concept of vocational assessments anytime an obligor has to pay, the problem that we have is it's going to lead to absurd results. It will undermine the concept of permanent maintenance, which has been codified for decades. And really, every year or so, there would be no reason not to make a pitch for doing a vocational assessment.
I mean, if I could push back on that point a little bit, we have assessments in lots of different contexts. And if somebody makes a motion to modify custody, at that point, it's pretty common to require a custody evaluation be done or some kind of parenting assessment to be done in order to determine the modification motion. So why would a spousal maintenance motion be treated differently from that? That's not shifting the burden to, you know, in order to determine whether to modify, sometimes we need those assessments.
Spot on, right on that, yes. Except the distinction would be this. First off, if a person is in fact currently not providing income or it hasn't increased in income, you would never even need to get to that. Alternatively, though, on the custody evaluation, and really what the court did arguably here is simply say we don't even need to get to that point because there hasn't been a substantial change on that one. But the argument that, while not envisioned today, was made multiple times at district court was really we need to do yet another voc assessment because we need to see if she can work on that. And without the underlying basis to show that is she working. But again, Madden is crystal clear. She doesn't need to do that, I would say, period. Your Honor, so moving on very briefly to the...
Well, I mean, there's no Karen waivers we discussed, right? But this agreement for permanent spousal maintenance, essentially what you're asking us to do is to say that that permanent agreement would preclude future vocational assessments. Like, on what basis could somebody who's agreed as here to provide permanent spousal maintenance, on what basis could they ever ask for a vocational assessment? And again, and comparing it to the custody context, if you had somebody who agreed at the stipulation, a decree to a certain custody arrangement, they're not precluded from getting custody evaluation after custody evaluation in the future if that's necessary to support a modification motion.
Yes, Your Honor. Under the custody argument, there's no such thing as envisioned like here with a permanent, meaning an assumption that it's not going to change. You always can change parenting time, of course, in the best interest standard. But on the endangerment side, we have the statutes in place to deal with the endangerment. So if there is endangerment, you absolutely could, and it would be appropriate every time if the court found endangerment, then you could absolutely do the custody evaluation. But here, I would submit, Your Honor, because it's the concept of we want to know on stipulations and awards, the finality doctrine, we want to know that it's going to be in place absent a substantial change of circumstances, not a theoretical change, is my argument on that one, Your Honor.
Hopefully, and effectively, if you've agreed to permanent spousal maintenance, you cannot rely on a subsequent vocational assessment. You don't have any way to require that in the future to establish the substantial change. The substantial change has to be evident through some kind of lottery winnings or some other method of becoming self-sufficient besides an assessment.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that. The only exception I would say, if we're kind of hung angels on the head of a pin, the only thing is, for example, if the appellant claim to have lost a job and not able to work, I think that would be appropriate to prove for his burden to show that I can't work and here's my expert on it. But just saying I think she can work doesn't cut it out is the argument. And that's what the case law is upholds too, Your Honor. Yep.
Mr. Kohlmeier, I have a question about Madden and the meaning of Madden. It isn't there, Ms. Olson says there's a difference between rehabilitation, an obligation to rehabilitate on the one hand, and then also taking a current measurement of somebody's current ability to work and to earn. Isn't that so? I mean, I guess Madden was about, you know, whether there's an obligation to undergo vocational or educational retraining. And clearly that you know, is not an issue. But I think appellant's argument or thesis is that even though she didn't obtain any vocational or educational retraining for whatever reasons, her condition that limited her income at the time of the dissolution has either subsided or lessened, and she is now able to do more than was anticipated. And so we should take a measurement of what she is doing now or what she is able to do now. Even though she had no obligation to improve her earning ability, if she has improved her earning ability, in fact, we should figure out what her earning ability is. Aren't those different things?
Yes. I think we disagree that she does. She has the increase. But to answer your question, yes, I think they're slightly different. But I think at the end of the day, it goes back to the concept of the permanency. And if you take a look at the Kemp, if we take a look at Hassel, Hecker, a lot of those are either deal with the initial award or modification of a temporary award. And then that's why Madden is so significant, because it deals with the concept of the modifying a permanent spousal maintenance award. So for the sake of argument, if my client could make $65,000 a year today, would that matter? I would argue under the case law, no, it wouldn't matter, because she is not doing it. Now, if she was doing it, clearly we've hit the 518A, 39, the substantial change, that met, and then we do the next analysis. But we're not even at that stage, Your Honor. And so I don't think the court even needs to get into the concept or address, you know, does she have the possibility of making more money or becoming self-sufficient?
So your view is, even if a person, let's say, who's limited by health concerns, even if that person has, say, a miracle cure and has no limitations, that person is not obligated to go back to work, even though they're fully able.
On a permanent award without the specific findings discussed? Yes, Your Honor, that would be.
When you say specific findings discussed, you're referring to that statement in Madden that says, unless the decree or the permanent award expressly said some obligation?
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly what I'm referring to.
So absent that language in the permanent spousal maintenance stipulation or award, you would agree then?
Yes, sure. Yes, yes. Yeah, I don't think, and I would submit the reasoning. No, I have saved a lot of time. Thank you.
So, Mr. Kohlmeier, you did get to answer, fully answer the question, because you can take more time if you need. Okay.
No, I think that's answered, Your Honor. I thank you anyway. If Your Honor would need me to elaborate, I sure could, but otherwise I think it's answered.
Could I ask Mr. Kohlmeier one more question, Judge Bradfield?
Go ahead.
And that is whether you have, so Ms. Olson earlier was summarizing your client's deposition and emphasizing evidence of her ability to work more than she is working. Do you agree with everything she said? Do you have a alternative point of view that you could summarize the evidence for us to help us understand her current ability?
Yes, Your Honor. As cited, and I don't have the cite handy, it is in my brief, but we specifically do address that in the brief and indicate that she's tried working at the pharmacy. Grip strength was never going to improve, so she couldn't work at the pharmacy. She tried working at an insurance agency. That didn't work. And so and we cite that in our brief specific. So I think there's a disagreement on the reading of the assessment done in 2018 versus the testimony that was given at the deposition and via affidavits. So, yes, we do would disagree with that. There's a misunderstanding there, Your Honor. Not by the court.
Anything further from the panel? Okay, thank you so much. We appreciate that, counsel, for respondent. And it looks like the clock has been reset. So there are 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Olson, we're ready for you when you are.
Thank you. I think getting back into this interpretation of Madden, I think that's where the fundamental disagreement here is. Again, this while there was discussions of imputing income, it was based on a bad faith claim from our client saying Mrs. Backman was fully able to work. She had that capacity. And by statute, we are to look at her ability to work currently, her present ability.
That's where I have a hard time with your argument, if I'm being honest, right? That Madden itself says, unless it's specific in the decree, that obligation doesn't exist. Even though if it were in the initial stage, the statute would require it. For purposes of modification, when there's been a permanent award or a permanent stipulation, there's no obligation there unless it's in the decree, right? And so that's why I was asking the questions earlier about, are you saying actual income? Actual income, I agree with you. That is the Kemp case, right? But it seemed to me from your briefs that you were seeking reversal from this court on the basis that the district court did not impute income or didn't consider imputed income or didn't consider ability to earn more than actual income. And that's the part where I think it runs afoul of Madden, and potentially that's where Kemp is distinguishable. So I wasn't sure if you were taking a different view of Madden or instead you were taking a different view of the arguments below than what I understood.
I think the point we are making here is that under Madden, we agree that without that express limitation to rehabilitation, there'd be no requirement to rehabilitate, meaning Mr. Backman could not file a motion saying, she's refusing to rehabilitate, Your Honor. I need to modify this, impute income to her because she is not rehabilitating herself and she should do that. I agree that Madden does imply that. What we disagree with and what I think is distinctly different is it doesn't say you can't impute income under Madden if she has rehabilitated herself. This isn't a situation where she's not doing things that she needs to do, like rework education training, things of that nature to potentially increase her income. She has the ability to increase her income and she's purposefully not working the hours she could work. That's, I don't believe that is a rehabilitation issue. That is looking at her physical abilities and what she could be making. And it's based more on that. So I think that's where their distinction between Madden and what we are arguing it differs, because we aren't saying she isn't rehabilitating herself. She's rehabilitated. She has this capacity. She's just refusing to do her full capacity. And I think that's where we get to this issue of permanent spousal maintenance and this Karen waiver, actually, which has been brought up. There is the court has jurisdiction. normally in these permanent spousal maintenance situations, we have care waivers. We have situations where we've divested the court of jurisdiction and it makes it pretty clear. Here, we don't have that. It does always allow you to basically reopen this, review everything at the current present situation. Right.
But I mean, that I ask those questions because there is some parallel for me. If Karen is a complete lack of jurisdiction, fine. But Madden may also sort of take something off the table as well. Court-created doctrine that could remove a factor from consideration. So that's why I was going down the Karen. Which you're exactly right. There's no Karen waiver here. And the question is, does Madden do something that's analogous or similar in the context of a modification motion or not?
And this is where I think Madden doesn't do that. I think Madden is a very limited and specific restriction. And that's the point of that is because we don't want people to have vague orders and then all of a sudden we're trying to clarify. So I understand Madden and what I interpret Madden to be, without this express requirement, you cannot make someone go try to rehabilitate themselves. You can't say you have to rehabilitate. This was always a requirement of you because it wasn't expressly made to that person at the time of the stipulation. However, in a situation where the person has done it, say the person has cancer, and then they go into remission, they're able to fully work, but they are choosing not to do that and they don't have these limitations that they would have had. Are we saying that that person now is absolutely required to get a permanent spousal maintenance forever? And that doesn't seem to be what Madden actually implies. What Madden is saying, you can't make them rehabilitate themselves, but if they do, then you go off of what the statute says. And I see I'm out of time.
Are there any follow-up questions in the panel? Doesn't look like it. Thank you, Ms. Olson. Thanks to both lawyers in this case. The court very much appreciates hearing from you. It's very helpful to our decision-making. And so with that, this matter is submitted to the court for a decision, and we will issue a written decision within the statutory timeframe.